Maratvam Adambitvam Ahimsa Chantyajam Achayupasanam Saucham Stadium Atma Vidigraha Indriyateshu Vairajam Anahankara Ivacha Janma Mrityu Charavyadi Dukha Dosha Anudashanam Asatya Anudishwanga Putra Dara Grihadishu Nityam Char Samachitatvam Ishtanishtofa Patishu Mayi Chananya Yogina Vakya Avyavicharini Vivikta Desha Sevidvam Arati Jani Samasadhi Adhyatma Jnana Nityatvam Tatva Jnana Arta Darshanam Etaj Jnana Iti Toktam Ajnanam Yat Pato Vyanta. Translation. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, perception of the evil of birth, death, old age and disease, detachment, freedom from entanglement with children, fight, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth, all these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be, is ignorance. Purport. This process of knowledge is sometimes misunderstood by less intelligent men as being the interaction of the field of activity, but actually this is the real process of knowledge. If one accepts this process, then the possibility of approaching the absolute truth exists. This is not the interaction of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. The embodied soul is entrapped by the body, which is a casing made of the 24 elements, and the process of knowledge is described here as a means to get out of it. Of all the descriptions of the process of knowledge, the most important point is described in the first line of the 11th verse, Mayi Chananya Yogina Bhaktir Abhivacharini. The process of knowledge terminates in unalloyed devotional service to the Lord. So if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. But if one takes to devotional service in full Krishna consciousness, the other 19 items automatically develop within him. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 5.8.12, Yasyasti Bhaktir Bhagavatya Kinchana Savaira Gunaistatra Samasate Sura. All the good qualities of knowledge develop in one who has attained the stage of devotional service. The principle of accepting the spiritual master, as mentioned in the 8th verse, is essential even for one who takes the devotional service. It is most important. Transcendental life begins when one accepts a bona fide spiritual master. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, clearly states here this process of knowledge is the actual path. Anything speculated beyond this is nonsense. As for the knowledge outlined here, the items may be analyzed as follows. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. The material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything honor or dishonor pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles, and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. As for actual advancement, in spiritual science, one should have a test to see how far he is progressing. He can judge by these items. Nonviolence is generally taken to mean not killing or destroying the body, but actually nonviolence means not to put others into distress. People in general are trapped by ignorance in the material concept of life, and they perpetually suffer material pains. So unless one elevates people to spiritual knowledge, one is practicing violence. One should try his best to distribute real knowledge to the people so that they may become enlightened and leave this material entanglement. That is nonviolence. Tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insults and dishonor from others. One is engaged in the advancement of spiritual knowledge. There will be so many insults and much dishonor from others. This is expected because material nature is so constituted. Even a boy like Prahlad, who only 5 years old, was engaged in the cultivation of spiritual knowledge, was endangered when his father became antagonistic to his devotion. The father tried to kill him in so many ways, but Prahlad tolerated him. So there may be many impediments to making advancement in spiritual knowledge, but we should be tolerant and continue our progress with determination. This is long commentary. I will not read the whole commentary. I will simply stop here for now and then try to summarize a little bit of what we've talked about so far. Hukam kuroti vachalam vangam vangari siri garim lakti patamaham vadhyaya shinya vadhivatanam nama om vishnu padaya krishna pristaya bhutale simate bhakti vidanta swami ti namane namaste saraswati devi gauravani pucharani yadashesha sanyavari kvastya chadir sitarane jai shi krishna chintanya prabhu nityana nisya dvedi padadhar shivasi lorda bhakti vidya hare krishna 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 hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. We're reading from the 13th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, entitled Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness. And these particular verses, which we have read from, Lord Krishna is speaking about the means for achieving knowledge. All of these different processes of knowledge are the means for obtaining real knowledge. Srila Prabhupada, in the beginning of his commentary, he distinguishes between different types of knowledge. He says, if one is interested in approaching the Absolute Truth, then this is the means by which one can obtain knowledge, how to approach Him. This knowledge is not simply the interaction, as he says, of the 24 elements as described before. This is actually the means to get out of the entanglement of those elements. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada is making a distinction between transcendental knowledge, knowledge by which one can understand the difference between matter and spirit. Prabhupada explains that elsewhere. He says that intelligence is to know what is the difference between what is matter and what is a spirit, and what is spirit and who is the controller of both. Therefore, the knowledge of which Lord Krishna is speaking about in this particular verses of Bhagavad Gita refers to transcendental knowledge, or that knowledge which cannot be understood simply by the interaction of the various material elements. This knowledge which can only be realized, transcendentally can be realized, as Krishna explains in the 9th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitam Dhamutama, Patrikshavagam Dhamyam Shushukam Kartam Aviyam. Describes this knowledge to be the king of all education, as the most secret of secrets, and because it gives direct perception of the self by realization, it is everlasting and joyfully performed. So, Lord Krishna describes this as the Raja Vidya. Vidya means knowledge, and Raja means king. It is the king of all knowledge. And it is Param of Guyam. Guyam means confidential. Confidential means that it cannot be very easily understood. Confidential knowledge is revealed, just like if you have confidential knowledge of a friend or an acquaintance is sharing some knowledge which is confidential, it is not so easily distributed. He only wishes to give something which is very confidential to somebody whom he can trust with this information. In the same way, Krishna gives in Bhagavad Gita, he gives different types of knowledge. And he describes knowledge which is guyam, confidential, which it reveals, and as Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example, the Supreme Lord reveals the right to reveal himself. Right? He has the right, reserves the right to reveal himself. He does not have to reveal himself to everyone. Why is he not understood or not properly understood? Krishna says, Naham Pakasha Shavasha Yoga Maya Samavita. I never manifest to those who are foolish, who are unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal creative potency, Yoga Maya, so the whole world knows me not. I'm born and infallible. That Yoga Maya, or that potency of the Supreme Lord, is described here and in many other places, the word nescience, ignorance, forgetfulness. That the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Being, although he is the cause, the entire cosmic manifestation, and from him everything is emanating, from him everything is maintained, by him everything is maintained, and ultimately by him everything is destroyed. He is the supreme controller and creator. So although we do not perceive him directly within material nature by these blunt material eyes, nonetheless we understand that the entire cosmic manifestation is a manifestation of his energies. Why we cannot see him with these eyes? Because he is presently covered from our vision, as he explains to Arjuna, that I cannot be easily seen in the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says that I have given you the eyes by which you can see me. He says that Naham Vedar na tapasa na dina na chejaya. The form you are seeing with your transcendental eyes cannot be understood simply by studying the Vedas, nor by undergoing serious penances, nor by charity, nor by worship. It is not by these means that one can see me as I am. And then the very important verse from the 11th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada would quote this verse many times. Bhaktya tvananyaya sakya aham eva vidhojana. He says, my dear Arjuna, only by undivided devotional service can I be understood as I am, standing before you, and can thus be seen directly. Only in this way can you enter into the mysteries of my understanding. So here Krishna reveals some confidential knowledge. He reveals that by undivided devotional service can you understand me. So this specifically relates to the point that Srila Prabhupada is making in the commentary to this verse about knowledge. That all of these that Lord Krishna has given are the processes for achieving knowledge of Krishna's transcendental existence, which ultimately culminates in devotion to him. As he states elsewhere in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham sarvasya prabhavo matak sarvam pravartate iti matka bhajate mam buddha bhagava samanvita. I am the source of the material and spiritual worlds. Everything is emanating from this. Everything is emanating from me. And the wise who know this perfectly, they engage in my devotional service and worship me with all of their hearts. So Krishna says, I am the source. Everything is coming from me. Those who know this perfectly, what do they do? To know this doesn't mean that one simply stops and becomes inactive. It stops there simply to know. Knowledge of the existence of the Supreme Lord opens up an awakening of the heart, and then therefore it makes us aware of who is Krishna, why has he created this cosmic manifestation, what is our relationship with him, how do we act according to that relationship. It's described that this sambandha abhideya prayojana, this is real religion. Sambandha means to know what is my relationship with the Supreme Lord. Abhideya means to act according to that relationship. And prayojana means the perfection. What is the perfection of that relationship that one has with the Supreme Lord? Sambandha means to know, to make some connection. Our example is oftentimes given of the story of Sarvagya, the astrologer who informed the impoverished man who had been living in poverty for much of his life that he said, this all Sarvagya means all-knowing. This all-knowing astrologer revealed to this impoverished man, he said, why are you lamenting? Don't you know that your father has left you wealth? And he's hidden it in a place where it can be found if you dig on this side of the house. And this story, which is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita, it gives us a little bit of an understanding of what is sambandha. Sambandha means to establish some connection. So this all-knowing astrologer revealed by his understanding, his mystical understanding, that this man who had been living in poverty had actually a great source of wealth. It was his all along, but he didn't know where it was. So the astrologer told him, well, this is where you can find it. If you dig on the eastern side of the house and go underneath the surface a little bit, you'll find there is a big pot of treasure. So that is called sambandha. That's making some connection. Making connection means that previously there was connection was there. The father had left wealth for his son, but he hadn't made the connection. He didn't know where it was. So as soon as the astrologer told him where it was, that was sambandha. That was establishing some connection between himself and his wealth that was waiting for him. Then what happens once the connection is established? And it's told, well, if you want to get it, you have to dig over here onto the eastern side. And if you dig, there you will find your wealth. It's there waiting for you. So this refers to actually, sambandha means to know who is God. Of course, when we speak of material wealth, it's incomparable to compare material wealth to the Supreme Lord, because there's no wealth of any value which is equal of value to the Supreme Lord. Krishna is described as is Bhagavan, means one who possesses all opulences in full. Therefore, for Krishna, he is the source of all wealth, he's the source of all beauty, he's the source of all knowledge, source of all strength, source of all renunciation. Krishna manifests all of these opulences complete. Therefore, any wealth, however much it may be, however much one can accumulate, is no equal value to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, obtaining one's relationship to the Supreme Lord is understood to be the greatest treasure, the greatest attainment of wealth. When one knows Krishna, then everything else that is noble becomes known and becomes revealed to that person, because Krishna is the source of everything. The point is that knowledge of the Supreme Absolute Truth, or sambandha, is the most confidential knowledge. And that knowledge cannot be understood simply by mental speculation. There is a verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Nayam Sukapo Bhagavan Dehinam Gopika Sutta, that Krishna is accessible not by mental speculation, but he's accessible to those who are engaged in spontaneous loving devotional service to him. Those who actually awaken within their hearts a desire to please him, to serve him. Those who know perfectly that Krishna is the source of everything, what do? Once making that connection, they want to do something to serve him. They want to do something to please him. They want to offer their love to him. These are all natural symptoms of the soul, which Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita to be the actual living force behind the physical material body and is eternal. Therefore, one has to know the difference between the body and the soul. And this is knowledge. This is transcendental knowledge. How to know about the existence of the soul? We understand. One has to hear from spiritual authorities. This is how one can begin to understand. And then when one hears sambandha, makes some connection, then one acts according to the relationship. What does the soul do? The soul has different activities than simply a physical body. The physical body has activities, it does the maintenance of the body, but the soul also has activities which are performed for the benefit of the self. Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example that if one has a golden bird cage but simply polishes the golden cage but doesn't feed the bird, after some time certainly the cage will be very shiny. But what is the value of having a shiny bird cage if inside the bird dies to fail to feed the necessities that the bird requires for bird's maintenance? So in the same way, if one simply caters to the needs of the physical body but does not recognize the needs of the soul, then the result is although the body may be nourished, maintained, but the soul also has needs and has desires that need to be fulfilled. And therefore, even the most healthy body cannot guarantee that one will be happy. Therefore, real knowledge means to know what is matter and what is spirit, and who is the controller of both. In other words, what is the difference between body and the self? Prabhupada oftentimes uses the expression about the necessities of life. We oftentimes think that necessities of life, something that life requires, is food and clothing and shelter. These are necessities for life. But actually, as Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, life exists beyond the body. So life also has necessities. We just described the necessities to maintain life in the body. Food, shelter, clothing. Yes, these are necessities for maintaining life in the body. But in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dehi nosminyata dehi kumaram jovanam jara. The embodied soul passes from boyhood to youth to old age. Similarly, the soul passes into another body at the time of death. Dhira tatra namuyati. One who is dhira, one who is self-realized, he's not bewildered by this change. So he describes this eternality of the soul within the body. Therefore, when the body is finished, the soul continues to live. Therefore, what are the necessities of life? How can the necessities of life be food, shelter, and clothing? Life has its own set of necessities, and which have nothing to do with maintaining life within the body. And unless those necessities are met, although the body may be very healthy, may be very comfortable, still, satisfaction of the self may still be greatly lacking. This satisfaction of the self, of course, is the knowledge of spirit, knowledge of who I am and what are my activities on the spiritual platform. What does the soul do? If we're going to establish a connection between the soul and the Supreme Lord, then we have to understand, once establishing that connection, how does one act according to that relationship, that I'm a servant of the Supreme Lord? And the best way to serve the object of service is with love. And therefore, Prabhupada is explaining here that all these processes of knowledge all culminate in devotional service to the Absolute Truth. Why does it culminate in devotional service to the Absolute Truth? It culminates because that devotional service which is rendered with body, with heart, and by the soul, within the body, it is the most complete form or expression of love. Because it goes beyond the temporary restrictions or constraints of the material world and continues even after this body is finished. So therefore, it is recommended here to obtain this type of knowledge, this knowledge of spirit. One actually has to be humble, one has to be prideless, non-violent, tolerant, simple, approach a spiritual master. All these different types of processes for acquiring knowledge are required to obtain spiritual understanding of life, not just simply the accumulation of information which is directed towards simply maintaining the body. The first, As for knowledge outlined here, the items may analyze as follows. The first is humility. And here it's described. Humility means that one should not be anxious to have the satisfaction of being honored by others. Prabhupada says the material conception of life makes us very eager to receive honor from others. But from the point of view of a man in perfect knowledge, who knows that he is not this body, anything, honor or dishonor, pertaining to this body is useless. One should not be hankering after this material deception. People are very anxious to be famous for their religion, and consequently sometimes it is found that without understanding the principles of religion, one enters into some group which is not actually following religious principles and then wants to advertise himself as a religious mentor. So Prabhupada is talking about the desire for receiving honor. Humility is a very important quality for getting recognition by the Lord. We're always trying to get recognition. That's one of the tendencies of our nature. We want recognition, we want pride, prestige. In fact, today in our modern society, these types of principles are oftentimes very strongly inculcated in the sense of individual and collective and national pride. But actually, here, the recommendation is that a humble person, or one who knows that he is not this body and doesn't want to do anything to try to increase the recognition of this body, that humble person is the person who is recognized by the Supreme Lord, who is situated within everyone's heart. Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Tavasya Chaham Vidhi Sanavishto Matasmatam Gyanam Apohanam Cha. Says, I am situated within everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. So Krishna, when he sees that a person is not striving for material recognition, how can a person do that? A person can do that when he's striving to please the Lord. Automatically, that humility is obtained when he strives to satisfy the Lord, because he knows the Lord, what is it that pleases the Lord? What is it that satisfies the Lord? In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Prahlad Maharaj explains to his friends, he says, my dear friends, you cannot please the Supreme Lord even if you become expert Brahman, even if you become advanced in etiquette or vast learning, nor by austerities, accepting vows, chastity, and great sacrifices. None of these things awaken the Lord's pleasure. The Lord is pleased only when one has unflinching, unalloyed devotion to Him. Without sincere devotion to the Lord, everything that one does is simply a show. Prahlad Maharaj explains in this verse that the Lord is pleased when one is trying to please Him. The external result is irrelevant to the Lord, because the real result the Lord wants to see is that the devotee is awakening love within his heart. And that love is very powerful. Love is a binding force. It's the most powerful force. If one actually has real love for the Supreme Lord, it's described how the Lord actually becomes purchased by such love. Therefore, Prahlad Maharaj recommends that even if you become materially expert, that won't awaken the Lord's pleasure, because these things don't impress Him. He's not impressed by our beauty, He's not impressed by our strength, He's not impressed by our material knowledge. He already has all of these things in His possession to the complete degree. Most beautiful, most knowledge. Why would He be impressed by any amount of material knowledge or beauty or strength that we can display? This will not attract Him. What attracts Him is love. And that love means that a person is simply trying to please the Lord with whatever he has, with his wealth, with his intelligence, with his knowledge, with his strength. If he tries to please the Lord is situated within the heart, becomes very pleased, because he knows, as the super soul and as the witness, he knows what is taking place within the heart. He knows the purpose, the person's intention. And therefore, when a person tries to please the Lord, he knows that he doesn't need any kind of external display to satisfy the Lord, because the Lord is not impressed by such external displays. He's impressed with what's there within the heart. Therefore, A devotee of the Lord automatically is humble because he's not looking for some material honor. He's not looking for some material recognition. He knows these things are temporary. They come and go like the bubbles in the ocean. As Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita. Non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception and one has to tolerate them without being disturbed. Happiness and distress, honor, dishonor, as Krishna also explains in the 6th chapter in the Bhagavad Gita, for one who has conquered the mind, super soul is reached and he attains tranquility. For such a man, heat and cold, happiness and distress, honor, dishonor, they're all the same. He transcends the dualities of this world. He transcends the dualities because he's made his connection with the Supreme Lord. And therefore, happiness and distress, honor, dishonor, both are irrelevant to his existence. Because he's understood the real platform of knowledge, and he's understood the real platform of happiness, which is bhajaniya parama sukham matrasa sukhatvam. It's to that degree that I can make the Lord happy, then I become happy. Real happiness, not chapaldasukha, the flickering happiness of this world which comes and goes by the accumulation of wealth or sensual pleasure, but happiness that's derived by pleasing the Supreme Lord, who is there within the heart and becomes satisfied by one's devotion to Him. This is transcendental knowledge. But this knowledge, as Prabhupada explains, it's confidential, it's not so easily accessible, it's not found in the universities, it's not found in the material exchanges of knowledge. These things are not to be rejected. Prabhupada would oftentimes give the example that if we add Krishna, then everything else becomes valuable, just like if you have so many zeros, by adding one to all the zeros, every zero becomes meaningful. The more zeros you have, the more value you have, because you've added the one in front of it. So in the same way, if one adds Krishna to all of his knowledge, then that makes everything complete, because it puts the whole world in a proper perspective and makes it understood from a whole perspective, rather than just from a selfish perspective. As the world as being the place for me to simply to accumulate my necessities of life and maintaining life within this body, instead the devotee understands that this world ultimately is disseminating or is coming, emanating from the Supreme Lord, and everything is ultimately meant for His pleasure and is meant to be offered back in service to the Lord. And Prabhupada would give the example, just like a father who gives his child a small allowance. When the father gives his child some small allowance, of course, Prabhupada uses, I think, the example of a quarter. In the days when a quarter was something, I guess now it's probably like, you know, $100 bill. So he says the child gives the child a small, I think probably even said a few pennies, I think, wasn't it? I can't remember the analogy he uses. And he says the child goes and he takes this money his father gives him for his allowance and he buys a few pieces of candy. And after he buys some candy, he takes the candy back and gives it to the father and says, "Oh, look, father, look what I have bought for you." And Prabhupada gives the example that the father is so pleased, but not because of the candy. He's so pleased because although he gave his child something, the child took what he gave him and turned it around and made it an offering back to the father. And the father wasn't the candy that the father was attracted to, it was the love. It was the attitude. The child took something that the father had given and offered it back to him. So in the same way, the Supreme Lord has given everything for the maintenance of all living beings within this world. But when we exploit it, thinking it's all meant for ourselves, then what happens is we see how much conflict there is. But when we understand that everything belongs to God and should be offered back in love and service to Him, then that is the type of offering that the Lord sees in the attitude that He accepts from within the heart. And when he becomes pleased by such an offering of love, that is very satisfying to the self. If the Lord is pleased, then we become happy. We become satisfied. That is perfection of life. Therefore, to be humble, this is such a genuine, rare quality, but is so important, because humility, as described here, is the means for knowing God. And real humility means not wanting any honor for oneself, only wanting to please the Supreme Lord. If one is recognized by the Lord, then who else does he need to be recognized by? Yet everybody in this world is, you know, trying to get recognition from so many people, but actually the best person to get recognition, and Prabhupada even said that, I think he quotes Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, he says that one should act in such a way, not that one will see God, but that one will be seen by God. Mm-hmm. So we should want to be recognized by the Supreme Lord, and humility is that means for being recognized by Him, and ultimately, therefore, to be able to know Him. To go through this whole list is a whole week-long presentation in of itself. I only talked about humility, and there's still all these other processes for obtaining spiritual knowledge. But before I discussed all of these processes, I thought it was important to establish Srila Prabhupada's main point, which he established right in the very beginning of his commentary, that all of these processes of knowledge are meant to culminate in devotional service to Krishna. As he very clearly states, he says, so if one does not approach or is not able to approach the transcendental devotional service of the Lord, then the other 19 items are of no particular value. Therefore, we chose to stick to the one which is of most value, and then anyone can read the other 19 items at their leisure from this verses of Bhagavad Gita and be able to understand their real value in relationship to devotional service. I think I can stop here. And if anybody has any questions or comments or anything they'd like to ask with respect to what we've spoken about, we can ask them for them at this time. Not.
Is there any amount of offenses that Krishna will never forgive? Has it been known that
yes,
you had people spend their life with Krishna?
Krishna will not forgive an offense committed to someone who is very dear to him. And therefore, if one wants Krishna's forgiveness, he has to go back to the person he's offended. And that is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, not Canto, Srimad Bhagavatam, the story of Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni.
Where did it go?
How did it go? It had a nice ending. Although Durvasa Muni didn't have a very good time getting his ability. But he obtained knowledge. But it was painful. But ultimately, the Lord revealed to him that if you want to be forgiven by me, you'll come to the wrong place. Because my devotee is so dear to me that I've given my devotee my heart and my mind. Therefore, I can't forgive you, even if you come to me to forgive me, for forgiveness. If you want my forgiveness, the devotee's captured my heart and my mind with his love. So how can I think of forgiving you? Because I don't even have a mind to think about forgiving you. My devotee has my mind. So the Lord says, if you go to my devotee and if he forgives you, then you'll have my forgiveness automatically. And that's what he did.
The items in this verse are described as processes, but they also seem to be qualities. So is it that we practice devotional service and get these qualities, or first we get these qualities in order to attain pure devotional service?
Prabhupada quotes the verse, Yashyati Bhaktiya Bhagavachi Kishinaya Savai Guna Tatra Samasate Sura. So all the good qualities, such as knowledge, religion, and renunciation, become manifest when one is engaged in unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. On that basis, that's why he explained that, yes, these qualities were all manifest in one who obtains unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Lord. And therefore, devotional service in of itself. And he says, what is the next most important thing? Accepting a spiritual master. The first is that everything culminates in devotional service. The second is accepting a spiritual master. And if one accepts a spiritual master and learns from him the science of devotional service, automatically he will develop all of these qualities. And he'll learn through all of these different experiences. He'll learn about humility. He'll learn about tolerance. He'll learn about simplicity. All of these things, by acting upon them, will increase his realization of Krishna. So there are qualities, but they're also processes. The qualities which will develop for one who engages in devotional service, who has the great fortune or opportunity to learn about devotional service or to come in contact with a bona fide spiritual master. And then he learns about devotional service, and then automatically he develops these qualities which in themselves, which also become a process for gaining realization of Krishna. So they're both qualities and processes. It's not that one can have these qualities and, or should I say, if one doesn't act on these qualities, then he can never know Krishna. And therefore Krishna says, Bhaktiyatvananya, what is the last word? That verse also. Only by devotional service can I be known. Not just humility. Not just pridelessness. Not just tolerance. All of these things culminate in devotional service. And if one has devotional service, then he will be humble. He will be prideless. He will be tolerant. As there are so many examples of devotees who have these qualities. But for those who has not fully one who has not fully manifested these qualities, they must practice. Anything else?
You said you just had time to discuss that first quality, humility. Is that the first one that's described?
Yes.
My wisdom, that's the most important, if it's the first one.
Well, Prabhupada said, right in the commentary, the most important was devotional service, culminating devotional service. And then he said the next was approaching the spiritual master.
The second quality is pridelessness. What is, I'm not certain of the difference. If you're humble, aren't you also prideless?
Well, yes. If one is humble, with them.
But there's, what's the difference, I guess? Is really
Prabhupada describes pride here as where is it? He doesn't make a distinction. He makes no distinction in the commentary. He speaks of humility and pridelessness in turn. It's pretty much the same.
I guess you have to go to the Sanskrit.
Yeah, well, Amanitvam and Dhammitvam, that's those are the words, but I don't get tell you. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much.
Where?
He was just stretching his arm, right? Oh, is it a question?
He's too humble.
I thought you were stretching your arm.
Who would you make up?
No,
the mantra?
Here's the question.
If we enjoy something separate from Krishna, I heard that we are like a thief.
Like what?
A thief.
Thief.
Yes. So, You were talking about love, that we can, like the example of a child, that the father gives something to the child, he gets something to offer to the father. But if you can say something about, for example, we are taking things from Krishna, and then because we have a pain, we want to give back to Krishna as a thief. Because I am a thief, let's say, okay, Krishna, I stole this from you, let me just give it to you. No. It's not love, it's not an offer. So can you say something about that?
Well, that's fear. Which is basically what most people, you know, that's the level they can take religion sometimes. It's like it's God fearing, but there's a higher stage of religion than simply to fear God. It's to love Him.
I was wondering, what is that feeling?
Love?
I mean,
it's fear.
Neither you see.
It's the thunder pole. It's fear. Yeah. If I don't, I'm going to be punished. But religion is more than just fear. And therefore, sometimes people will turn to God out of fear. At least they turn to God. But that's not the highest principle of religion. There's a much higher platform by which we can offer something to God rather than this. Fear is still selfish because we're thinking, I want to protect myself. I don't want to suffer. But that's not the culmination of religion. That's not selflessness. Love means that you're only thinking of the beloved. So to say, I don't want to suffer, That's not a display of love. Love means that I want to do this for you, even if it brings suffering. That's love. That's selfless. Because one is not placing any condition upon what is being asked to do. And that type of love is so dear to Krishna that Krishna will always protect. Therefore he says, Kaunteya pati janahi nami bhakti pranashati. Declare it boldly, Arjuna. My devotee will always be protected. Krishna will never allow his devotee to suffer unnecessarily. He'll protect them. Ultimately, he'll protect them, as we understand, not that this is physical harm, but as I was just thinking before I came down today, I was talking to Priyari this afternoon, and I lost 3 godbrothers in the last week who all died. You know, from different events, you know, but still, you know, it's not that the person, it means when Krishna protects them, but it means they're not going to die. But protects them means that he protects them, the soul within the body, and therefore, so they do not have to take birth again. So, Krishna declares it boldly, he says to Arjuna, that my devotee is never vanquished, it means he's always protected, that he will come back to me. At the end of this life, he will come back to me. In many places, he says this in Bhagavad Gita. That is real protection. So to be selfless means that we're prepared to please, even at the risk of experiencing some inconvenience, some loss. And there's so many examples in the scriptures of devotees, you know, who rendered service to the Lord in this way and achieved perfectional state of devotional service. So, anyways, as you said, I probably answered your question with one word.
Yeah.
By defining what it was, fear.
How many forms of devotional service are there?
There are 9 processes of devotional service. Beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering. Shravanam, which are the most important. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarana. Hare. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Hare. Jai. Jai.